Morning, we're talking about continuing our study of the Bible in science, and we're talking about the Bible in biology. It's probably only exciting for Allison, but we'll try to make it exciting for everybody else as well to try to come to an understanding of how the Bible and biology can be studied in a way and compared in a way that can build our confidence, not in biology, but can build our confidence in God and in His Word. What is biology? What is it a study of? Study of life. Study of living organisms. The fun thing that our scientist friends... let me get that off of there. The fun thing that our scientist friends have to do is to try to figure out what life is. How do you tell somebody what life is? If you were a scientist and trying to define and to describe what life is, how do you do that? How do you explain it? Has to have carbon. Is that it? Okay, has to be able to sustain its own life. All things on this earth, all elements, material elements on this earth can be divided into two categories. You got your living, and then you got your what? You got your dead. You got your non-living. You got your organic materials, you got your inorganic materials. Question is, how do you tell the difference? Nicole says you got to have carbon, you got to be able to sustain life. How do you tell the difference between a frog and a rock? One doesn't bother you so much, the other one gives you the willies, right? How do you tell the difference? Sorry? One breathes. Hopefully it's not the rock, right? Is there a way to... And Nicole gives us a couple distinctions. Here's some established traits, some distinctions. Say, here's how we define life. Living beings, living organisms, are those that... that are capable of metabolism. What does that mean? Metabolism is one of those bad words, right? Metabolism is one of those things that we don't have anymore, that's working against us, right? Metabolism is that plant or that animal's ability to take in those elements from the outside, to process them in such a way that it can produce energy. Are plants able to do that? Trees able to do that? When the animals come along and eat those plants, are the animals able to take that in, to process it, to produce energy from those plants? Well, that helps us. Are rocks able to do that? Haven't been able to witness that particularly, have you? Living things are able to respond to stimuli. If you poke a frog... If you're brave enough to do that. If you poke a frog, what typically happens? There's going to be a reaction. If you poke a rock, anything going on there? Yeah, well, right. That's unless you move it yourself, and that's going to be number five on the list here, it's not going to go anywhere. But something that's living responds to stimuli. Something that's living experiences true growth. And growth is when these cells, and we're going to talk about these cells in a minute, when these cells within it are multiplying. That's when it experiences growth that can be observed and measured. Living organisms reproduce themselves. It takes those cells and it reproduces those cells and even is able to reproduce the entire organism to replicate the original organism. It's not going to create something new. If a frog reproduces, what does it usually reproduce? Have you ever seen a frog reproduce a rabbit? I mean, that would be a good trick, right? To pull that out of the hat, to pull a frog reproducing, that doesn't happen. But does a rock reproduce itself? Hey, have you ever taken a rock, a single rock, thrown it on the ground, and it breaks? Now you have more than one rock, right? It reproduced itself, right? Not so much.
You have more than one piece.
Now you have more than one piece of a rock. Doesn't work. Here's what Freddie was talking about. Living things are capable of autonomous movement. Can a rock move? Can a car move? Can a rocket ship move? Yeah, but we do something to it in order to help it to do that. Living organisms move on their own. Living organisms are characterized by complex organization. Is there anything that's overly complex about a rock? I keep going back to the rock, but that's easy. Anything overly complex about that rock? What's more complex, the rock or the frog? Well, obviously the frog is. Look at what these scientists have said. We've mentioned Simpson, George Simpson, several times in this study. He was called Mr. Evolution because that's what he advocated. But he even admitted, you look at a modern building, and obviously there's complexity to the modern building, highly ordered in its structure, but its complexity cannot begin to compare with a living system. A building takes architects, a building takes engineers, a building takes workers to come in and to put it together, and yet he says that doesn't even compare. And then you've got in Science Digest a couple decades ago, talking about the fact that you look at pliers, a chainsaw, and even a missile guidance system, and those take complexity, there's design, there's structure, but they say it doesn't even compare to a parasitic worm. Here's a missile guidance system. That's pretty complex, isn't it? If you went home today, could you design a missile guidance system? I mean, maybe over lunch, you know, you could figure it out. Huh?
Does it have to work?
No, it doesn't have to work, Chuck. I mean, that's the whole point, right? I mean, our missile guidance systems haven't always worked. But they say it's even more complex than a worm. How complex is a worm to you? You don't think it's that big a deal. But it's living, isn't it? Yes, Dirk.
Space shuttle is the most complex machine ever built.
Yeah, you look at the space shuttle, the space shuttle's pretty pretty complex, isn't it? I mean, to take something and to send it into space and to bring it back, and yet, as Dirk says, it's now obsolete. We're going to retire it and bring something else along. Those things that are living are those things that are characterized by complexity. So where did these living things come from? Where does evolution say that life came from? Big Bang? Single cell. Where'd the single cell organisms come from? The sludge. There was a time when scientists loved to talk about spontaneous generation. You don't hear about it so much anymore. Why is that? You can't prove it. Here's Mr. Simpson again, who said there was a time. Most biologists think it's probable that life did originally rise from non-living matter. But on the very same page, when he's talking about Louis Pasteur and some other pioneers, he said their studies have shown that spontaneous generation, we don't have a single known case of it. So there was a time, they believe in this. And then he says, but we don't have a single case to be able to prove it. That's kind of tough, isn't it? Is that kind of tough to believe in something that you don't have a single solitary shred of evidence for? Never at any point in the history of the world, in the history of science, never has there been a single case of spontaneous generation documented. It doesn't exist. There's no scientific proof that such exists. And so now many of these scientists have gone to believe in the law of biogenesis. What is the law of biogenesis? If bio, that means life. Genesis means what? Beginning. What is the law of biogenesis? They've had to admit that life, where does it come from? Life is God. It's got to come from life. That's the evolutionary concept. What's the biblical concept of where life comes from? Life comes from God. When Paul is, Acts chapter 17, you know where Paul is, what city Paul is in? Well, he's in Thessalonica at the beginning of the chapter, but you get later in the chapter, you know where Paul is? He gets to Athens. He comes to Mars Hill. What does Paul find when he's in Athens? What is predominant to Paul's experience while he's in the city of Athens? Statues of other gods. Idolatry. What are these idols? What are these statues made out of? Stone. Wood. Paul, on this occasion, says to these people that there is a God, not your God, there is a God who gives to all life and breath and all things. Where did our life come from? Did it come from these idols? In Genesis 2, the Bible says that God breathed into man, what? The breath of life. That's where life came from. Let me give you a simple syllogism here, simple logic, three points of a logic syllogism here. Biological life is incapable of generating itself. Is that true? Biological life is incapable of generating itself. Life cannot just come into existence. Is that true? Even scientists have said, the spontaneous generation stuff doesn't work anymore. If that's true, is this true? Does life exist? Look around, right? So life cannot create itself, but life exists. What do you have to conclude from that? Life cannot create itself, but life exists. Where did it come from? Life had to have had an origin that comes from some other form of life. And that's hard to think and fathom. It's hard to convey to somebody. Is there ever a point where God was not living? Was there a point where that has God evolved into the God he is today? It's hard for us to grasp. You know, Psalm 90, the Bible says that from everlasting to everlasting, thou art God. And that's hard for us to figure that God has not had a beginning. God will not have an end. He always has been. He always is. He always will be. And it was the ever-living God who gave us life. Does that take faith to believe? Does it take faith to believe that? Were you there? Were you there when God created Adam and Eve? Does it take faith to believe that that's where life came from? Yes. Does it take faith to believe that life came from, what'd you say, sludge? Does it take faith to believe that life just came from sludge and that we have evolved and that we have developed over time to where we are today? Does that take faith? For which of those two is there any evidence? Is there evidence for the creation of life, as we read about in the Bible, or is there evidence for sludge becoming a human? I don't want you looking at your husband and trying to imagine, you know, if that's really possible. We're not going there today, okay? Which one do we have evidence for? I mean, you look at some people in the world and you think, they might be the missing link, right? Honestly, where's the evidence? What do we have evidence for? Scientists have had to note, many of them, the mathematical improbability that life jump-started itself. And so they've come up with various illustrations. They have noted that life's jump-starting itself would be like an explosion in a print shop creating an unabridged dictionary. It's funny to me that they specify that it's an unabridged dictionary. Because, you know, if an explosion created just a regular old dictionary, that's not so bad. It's funny that they note it had to be an unabridged. Sir Fred Hoyle over in Britain said that it'd be like a tornado sweeping through a junkyard and creating a Boeing 747. That's what it'd be like if life could create itself. But I like what Hoyle's second illustration. He said it would be like a vast group of blind men, and he put the number of blind men at 10 to the 50th power. One followed by 50 zeros. A vast group of blind men simultaneously at the same time solving Rubik's Cubes that were mixed up. So you get you get one with five or with 50 zeros behind it. You give all those men scrambled Rubik's Cubes and they simultaneously solve them. And that's how possible it is for life to start itself. Stephen?
It seems like so far the evidence.
Well, you know, at some point, if you're a scientist, you've got to come along with the evidence and say, life just can't come from nowhere. But that's what they, when you go back and look at these, two, three, 4 centuries ago when they're trying to prove spontaneous generation. Can you prove spontaneous generation? What did they do to try to prove, you know, why did they even come up with the idea of spontaneous generation? You leave a piece of meat outside, and then you come back the next day, and what's on it? Maggots. Ooh, we got life. It just came about. Yeah, right. That's when we need one of those discovery cameras, you know, or National Geographic, you know, one of those cameras that just stays positioned on the meat. Then you'll see where the maggots come from, you know. But, you know, we come back and all of a sudden, you know, we think that all of a sudden there's this great life. We don't have time to get into this, so I'm just going to zip through this part of it. But it's been shown that biological life is so complex that it can only exist in the most strict conditions. Have we found life anywhere else in the universe? Seriously, I mean, Have we discovered life anywhere else? Have we received any kind of communication saying, hello, we're over here? No. Is there life on Mercury or Venus? Mars, Jupiter, Saturn? Why not? Great solar system. I mean, we got a great solar system, right? You ever gone to another one to compare? Do some comparison shopping? We've got a great solar system. Why isn't there more people around here? Or creatures or some kind of living forms? The conditions are too extreme anywhere else except for Earth. Now, how did that happen? How is it that we got lucky to be here on Earth in order to live here? Everything on Earth is in the right proportions, just right proportions. We talked about that when we were talking about some of the things of astronomy and things earlier. But what about the replication of life? How does life reproduce life? How does the Bible say? In Genesis chapter 1, when God created everything in Genesis 1, how does life create additional life? After its own kind. You read that over and over and over again in Genesis 1, that it was after its kind, after its kind, after its kind. What does that mean? Frogs make frogs. Horses make horses. It's after their kind. What about schnauzers? What do schnauzers make? Oh, well, you know, you could you crossbreed? What if you crossbreed one breed of dog with another breed of dog? Are you going to get a cat? Mike, you're the pet expert. You ever done that? You ever crossbreeded two kinds of dogs and got a cat? You always get a dog. Did you ever get a bird that looked like a dog? I mean, you always get a dog. It's after its kind. That's how life replicates itself. But that's not what evolution wants us to believe. Evolution wants us to believe that we all came from a one-celled organism. And over time, this one cell became two cells, became three cells, four cells. How many cells do we have in the human body? Did you count them? Did you get up this morning and say, how many cells do I have today? We've got millions of cells in our body. How did we go from one cell to millions of cells? If you think it takes faith to believe that God breathed into man the breath of life, it takes an incredible leap of not just faith, but logic in itself to say that one cell has created millions of cells. But that's what we're led to believe. It's interesting, this Austin Clark, who was with the Smithsonian, said there's not the slightest basis for this assumption that one cell went to millions of cells beyond the circumstance that in arithmetic, the number one comes before the other numbers. So the only evidence that we possibly have that one cell became millions of cells is that one comes before a million. That's all the evidence we've got. That's incredible evidence, isn't it? But that scientists want us to believe this one-celled situation. What is in every one of our cells? You watch CSI, right?
DNA.
I mean, you know everything there is to know about DNA because you've watched CSI. You've watched NCIS. Oh, yeah, you can't have NCIS or CSI without DNA, right? I mean, what kind of show would that be? Dragnet used to be one of my favorite shows. DNA, Jack Webb, DNA. It didn't happen, did it? Just the facts? He never came up with DNA. Why not? They didn't have it back then, right? People didn't have DNA back then, right? That's why just the facts never came. How many cells do we have? Millions of them. And inside these cells, there's a nucleus, right, Allison? There's a nucleus. That's the powerhouse of the cell. And in that nucleus is our DNA. What is our DNA? What is that? It's our genetic profile. Is that what you said? Yeah, I like that. That sounds like a science class. It's our genetic profile. It's who we are. It makes us up. Do you know how complicated DNA is? I mean, have you ever taken one out and looked at it? Say, wow, you know, that's weird. Yeah, I mean, it's no big deal. Here's how scientists have tried to explain how complicated and intricate our DNA is. If you were to take one out and play with it, if you were to just go to one cell, extract the DNA from one cell, and stretch it out like a bungee cord or something, and stretch it out, it'd be 6 feet long. In one cell? You can't even see the cell without putting it under a microscope. And yet scientists tell us if you stretched it out, it'd be 6 feet long. Now, what if you took all of the cells in your body, and you took all of them out, you took all the DNA out, and you tied them together? You can imagine yourself doing this, right? You get your DNA strands out, you tie all the strands together, and then you just make a big long rope out of it. How long is it going to be? It's going to stretch from the sun and back. Remember, it's 93 million miles to the sun, so it's 186 round trip. You could get to the sun and back 400 times just tying your own DNA. Try it. I mean, go ahead and, I mean, see if they're close. That's all inside our body. It's all within our cells. DNA in a single human cell is so intricate that if you were to try to translate the code that is in the DNA, translate the information in the DNA, put it into English, you'd have to have 1,000 books of 600 pages each. Have you read that much lately? Does anybody still have a set of encyclopedias at home? Are those still in the homes? I won't ask you when the last time it was that you pulled it off the shelf. How many volumes are in a World Book? Of course, World Book wasn't as big as Encyclopedia Britannica, but I only had World Book, just a little set. It was what, like 22 volumes in that thing? Something like that, I don't remember. World Book, the Encyclopedia Britannica, you know, they tried to up them one, and so they just, you know, you got this whole bookshelf full of them. 1,000 books, 600 pages to translate the code of one cell of DNA. And we're supposed to believe that just kind of happened. That kind of information and that kind of complexity just happened. And yet all of that information can be contained in something about the size of an aspirin tablet. Where did that come from? How did it come into existence? Something so complicated. Where is the origin of life, and how does life reproduce itself? Inside each of those DNA codes is a program. And in that program, it's determined what that DNA is going to reproduce. I don't know if this makes sense to you or not. DNA is composed of the same constituents wherever they're found. If it's in a tree, if it's in a person, if it's in a mouse. And then within that particular DNA code, within the program, it tells it what it's supposed to be. It tells it if it's supposed to be a mouse, or if it's supposed to be a bird, or if it's supposed to be a human. Don't you wish your kids would obey as well as apparently our DNA code does? It creates whatever it is supposed to create, a mouse or a man. Do you know that the DNA in our bodies? Remember, we've got millions of cells. Do you have cells in your eye?
Yes.
Do you have cells in your fingers?
Yes.
Cells in your tongue, cells in your hair, what's left of it. Where do you... Each one of your cells has DNA within it. And each one of those... each one of them is programmed. The DNA in your finger, it could have been an eye. It could have been a foot. It could have been a toe. All of the DNA in our body, apparently, from what scientists say, they have the makeup of the whole body built within that one single cell. Within that one DNA code is the makeup of the whole body. And yet, that specific DNA is engineered to be a specific part of the body. Is this true, Allison? Am I making this up? I'm not making this up. I'm glad I couldn't make this stuff up, all right? For sure I couldn't make this stuff up. Each one is engineered to be a specific part of the body. Aren't you glad that you are not made up of cells, DNA code that is only fingers? You know what you would be? You'd be one big finger. You know, you'd have fingers, all, and that's all you would be. Aren't you glad? Now, how did the body figure that out, though? How did your DNA figure out that you weren't supposed to be all toes? How does it figure that out? Just by accident? Just by accident, it figures out that, oh, we've got enough DNA for legs. We don't need any more legs. We've got the two we need. Stop the production of legs. How does it do that? We're supposed to believe that, oh, this just kind of happened. All of this complexity, all of this design just kind of happened. A program cannot write itself. Can a computer program write itself? They seem to unwrite themselves, right? I mean, they seem to mess up themselves, but they don't write themselves. They don't create themselves. They don't come into existence on their own. Somebody has to program them, and so many scientists have had to conclude that if we receive some kind of intelligent communication over the radio waves from a distant galaxy, you know what people would say? Oh, there's some intelligence out there. We received a message from outer space. There's got to be some intelligence out there. Well, if we get that same kind of communication, when we just look at a DNA molecule, why aren't scientists saying the same thing? This is more complex than anything else we've got on this earth. By all rules of reason, could there be a code which carries a message without somebody originating that code? It's obvious, as you look at the evidence, if we compare these things, it's obvious that there's more evidence for life being created by God than there is for, oh, it just happened. And I didn't put this on your handout because I knew we weren't going to have time to talk about it. But if you're fascinated by the study of DNA, woohoo! If you're fascinated by the study of DNA, DNA is nothing without RNA. Of course, we don't know RNA because that's not on CSI. I mean, they don't talk about it, so it might as well not exist. But guess what? Next time you watch CSI and they're all about the DNA, just think in your mind, ha ha, I know something you don't. That DNA could be nothing without the RNA. You know? And you're smarter than the guy on CSI. Because he's not, never mind. All right. Anyway, I just thought I'd throw that in there for you. You look around our creation. Anything that fascinates you? Anything that says, you know, this creation that we live in is just mind-boggling. Look at the interdependence and the balance that exists in nature. On what day were plants created? You want to sing the song? On what day were plants created? Day three, okay. You know the song now, right? Day three, you got plants. What day were animals created? Sixth day. Do we have any animals on... I lost my remote, so I'm looking for it now. Do we have any animals on any days earlier than day six? What kind of animals do we have on day five? Oh, we got some birds. So did the birds, when they came along, when the animals on day six came along, did they need anything to eat besides the carnivores? Here we've got plants on the earth before we've got animals. That sounds about right, doesn't it? God did not put the animals on a starvation diet from day one. There were plants already there for them. What about the reproduction ratios of animals? You ever thought about, hopefully not very detailed, but have you ever thought about how rabbits reproduce themselves rather productively? Have you ever seen a rabbit just have one rabbit, or a kit, or whatever that little baby rabbit's called? You ever seen a rabbit just have one rabbit? That happens. But more often than not, he's having multiple in the litter. Right? How long is that gestation? Can you imagine a gestation period of only about 30 days? Would that be incredible? 30 days. And you don't just get one. You get lots. Aren't you glad you're not a rabbit? Okay? Huh? Yeah, especially on the ark. Man, they had rabbits coming out their ears. 30 days, and then when those babies are 6 months old, they can turn around and have rabbits. That's an incredible ability that you're glad that all animals don't have, right? What if elephants reproduced at that rate? Can you picture what's happening here? Why is it that rabbits have that reproductive ability and elephants don't? Is that just coincidence? Is that just luck of the draw? Woohoo, we got lucky. We're not overrun by elephants. How about a gestation period of 2 years? Does that sound warm? Welcome? And fortunately, elephants only have one and not a litter of eight or nine, right? Huh? Yeah, fortunately for them. How did that happen? What if that was reversed? What if it was different? You look at the balance and the interdependence that exist in nature, and did it just happen? What about animals and their navigation skills? How is it that ants, you ever figured out how small an ant is and then figured out how far, in our terms, he might travel from his home and then he's able to get back? I mean, how does that ant in the middle of your house get there? And how does he know from the middle of your house how to get back? I mean, he's not dropping crumbs that you can see, but his ability to navigate. And not just the ant. How about salmon? You ever gone up north and watched these salmon as they try to swim upstream? It's pretty cool. Here they are, hatched in freshwater. They swim upstream. They get out in the ocean, and then they come back to the very same place where they were hatched. How'd they know how to get there? I mean, how in the world do they figure that out? What about birds who migrate thousands of miles and then go back to the same place? Scientists have had to admit about birds, it's amazing that their heart and their wings can even do this. Some of them fly, 10,000 miles. But how does he say their tiny brain solve problems that in navigation that even humans would have problems with. I mean, you've probably insulted somebody somewhere along the way and said they're a bird brain, right? How does a bird brain navigate better than some humans do? And I'm not pointing any fingers. All my fingers are curled up. How is he able to navigate better than some humans? Wish we could talk about that more. Interesting. What about camouflage? We've been talking about frogs. How is it that frogs are not hot pink? I mean, why don't we have any hot pink frogs? Because we don't have any hot pink lily pads, right? These frogs are able to blend in. The snowshoe rabbit, his coat, the color of his coat changes depending on the season. Is that just an accident? How did he decide, you know, I'm going to change my wardrobe when winter comes, because what is it, after Labor Day, you're not supposed to, I don't know, I'm making this up. Is it after Labor Day, you're not supposed to wear white? Okay, good. Thank you for justifying that was somewhere in there. So how did the snowshoe rabbit figure that out? I mean, is he like the fashion queen of the animal world? No, you got to wear white now. How did he figure out to do that? God designed him in just that way. What do we conclude from all this? We conclude that time and chance, that doesn't work. Doesn't explain any of this. Mother Nature doesn't exist. Mother Nature doesn't exist any more than Mother Goose does. All right? We talk about Mother Nature, we talk about Mother Goose. No such thing. What is the only explanation that has any evidence behind it? That God created the world. That's the only evidence that we have. There is incredible design. And with design, there must be a designer. And even in the field of biology, next time you watch CSI, when they start talking about DNA, you can say, my God made that DNA. And that makes us know that there is a God. Wish we had more time to spend on some of that in detail, but thanks for your attention this morning.